Hello and welcome to Theatre Voice. I'm here with Jess and Tim, aka Made in China, to talk about their show, We Hope You Are Happy, Why Would We Lie? Which I think is a very evocative title for your piece. You're kind of doing this whole playing with the audience and what's real and what's kind of fictional throughout the piece. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
We're playing with that. I don't think we set out to make a piece that was all about whether truth is being told and truth and lies. That's more just inherent in everything we do, probably. That's one of the things that makes a theatre piece theatrical, or any live event theatrical, that you've got someone standing up in front of you. You can question what their motivations are and whether they're being sincere about what they're doing or not, and we find that an interesting way to create a bit of interest, I suppose.
So it's sort of your currency with the audience.
Yeah, I think it's any theatre maker's currency, but it depends whether you want to really overtly use it or not, and we choose to, at least in this piece.
We certainly acknowledge it more than play that we do. That's not the work that we make, so therefore we can kind of step back and look at what it means to be performing and to be saying things on stage, especially if there's a pretense of not having characters.
Yeah, and especially if you're saying things directly to the audience. I suppose that's the big distinction between this piece and most of our work, well, all of our work so far, and those kind of straight plays, that it's all the more direct and immediate when that question of sincerity, when things are being said to you and big claims are being made. And obviously the show involves
some fairly preposterous
claiming all sorts of things that are not necessarily ethical or realistic. That's our way of getting the audience to question how they interact with the subject matter, I suppose.
You know, Tim and I both come from a theatre background. I classify myself as a performance artist, only in that actually doing things on stage. So if that's kind of my loose definition of what performance art is.
Most simply, that means I'm a playwright and Jess is a performance artist or live artist.
And when we come together in a room, we both take some steps towards each other and meet in the middle, which is, you know, what the work ends up being.
Yeah. And for this piece, you've got a performer that you're working with, which is Chris.
Yeah.
So
Chris Bailey. Yeah.
How was that person?
Yeah, Chris just kind of came into the room with us and just worked within our process. So all of a sudden you have three people in the room kind of working towards one end product and contributing and editing. Chris worked really closely with us. There's a section at the beginning where we tell the audience what we hope for them, and that literally came from a conversation that we had in my garden kind of before we even started workshopping the show. It's where the title of the show came from. So we already had quite a big sense of where we wanted it to go and what it was about.
But as soon as he came on board, Chris was integral to most of the rehearsals and a lot of the material that was generated. Some of the best ideas come from Chris in the show. And it's all devised, you know, whether or not Chris was there, it's all devised. At the same time, it's also all, by the end, it's all scripted, and every single word is written down in the text and should be performed like that.
And gone over and over and over again, you know. We had a script, and then, you know, Tim and I sat there and read it out loud to each other, and while sitting there, we're like editing it down, and then it was kind of done again, and we did it again that same way, just like in that final, it was a final draft, and we treated it like a piece of text.
So once it was a script, it was a script.
And then
you kind of stuck to that as much as...
And we do stick to it, you know. I think that once
we've decided something should definitely be in the show, but everything's up for grabs for quite a long time, I suppose. And there is 20 times more text generated than
for both of our, for Stationary Access and We Hope That You're Happy, I have files, you know, that are 3-4 inches thick of text that we have generated and that we have made and that at some point we thought might go into the show or didn't. We always knew it was going to go into the show, but it was better to just write it out and have a look at it and use it to kind of help make some of our rules and some of our actions. And
so in the show, you've got quite a clear, what seems like a quite a clear structure, because you've got a series of things that get repeated more kind of progressively. Did that come first, or was that something that you wanted to weave in as you came across those kind of moments?
We use repetition, you know. I think that we're interested in repetition as a storytelling device, and Certainly when it comes to physical tasks, repeating something over and over and over again, especially if it's a difficult task, it shows progression in a really blatant and simple way, and something that's, you know, something that starts off being funny by the end is painful.
Mm.
And I think that our general interest in using that as a method of telling stories probably lended itself to the way we repeated things. But I think a lot of what we actually say and what we actually do definitely happened in the room.
Mm.
But structuring...
I think it's always a possibility for us, and this you coming from the theatrical or the live art background you come from, it's always going to be a possibility that we're going to use dance breaks or some kind of breaks as an equivalent where loud music cuts in, loud pop music, and
drinking breaks,
extreme and excessive and quite silly happens. And as Jess says, the story that often emerges, certainly in this piece emerges, is that it's funny and it's less funny and it's a bit less funny, and by the end it's not really funny and it's quite painful. And we find that's quite a revealing way to speak.
You know, structure in general is something that we use quite a lot. Like, you know, when we made the show that we have now, we did a showing of it in last March at the National Theatre Studio, and I'd say about, I think it's close to 80% of the material that's in our final show was in that showing. What ended up happening after that is we sat down. Chris and I actually went to the Junction in Cambridge and sat there with the script and cut the script up and repasted the script on different papers. So we just thought about structurally what we were doing. So we kind of kept the breaks in the same points. We just moved text around to help create a more coherent story. So it really, I think, it's a show in two parts and an ending. Whereas before it was like lots and lots and lots of parts that didn't quite make as much sense.
Mm.
So you wanted a sort of progression,
yeah,
at least in tone.
Yeah, there's definitely a progression in tone, and I think that it's important that, you know, in the middle of the show something extreme happens, and physically Chris and I are changed quite significantly, and with that physical change comes a change in tone.
The physical progression is... same as with Stationary Excess, our first show, that's probably the most striking one when you're watching the piece, and it's the most, it's the easiest shortcut in a way to displaying a progression, I think. In terms of the text, in a way, the text plays against that kind of progression in We Hope You're Happy, and probably in Stationary Excess as well.
Stationary Excess is a story, it's quite a classic story arc.
It is, but it's a kind of a case in both of them of the text just kind of going and going and going until it runs out, rather than necessarily going on an arc.
So you think there's an interplay between the reality of the physical stuff that happens on stage and then the kind of control of the text that goes in they kind of juxtapose.
Well, definitely, they definitely juxtapose, and there's definitely a friction, and I think a lot of that comes from a tone that we have when we make work, which is... I totally forgot this. Andy said that when I was speaking, and We Hope That You're Happy, when Chris and I spoke... we spoke in a way where the words came out like it was like we'd just been sick at a party and it was that last little bit of vomit just coming out of our mouths. And that's actually exactly right. Like, it's the most visceral kind of way.
Explanation.
Explanation.
Yeah.
You know, we just... it's just like everything is given a similar weight almost. So talking about being at September 11th and, you know, being disappointed that we wanted to go on a picnic, or talking about how, you know... when Chris and I were children, he locked me outside on the roof of his house, you know, when I was scared of heights, or him saying that when, you know, he was really depressed and scared one night and I blocked all his phone calls. They all had like a similar kind of weight to them. And by doing that, it creates both humor and actually it makes each thing really clear.
It's a way to try and have, I think, probably what we... aim for. I don't think we consciously aim for this, but to aim to have everything in the show undercutting another element of the show, so that there's a competition between all the elements, and not just the people, but
friction,
everything rubs against, and that creates surprise. And so if you cover yourself in flour and ketchup and it's all dramatic and loud music and it stops, the obvious thing to do would probably be to scream, so we would never have the person scream. We would have a little joke
and 4 minutes of silence immediately after, while we eat popcorn and watch the audience like it's a movie.
Mm.
It seems like it's obviously quite a fragile balance, but it seems quite intuitively that you know when to kind of break off. But how do you negotiate that in the show? And
a lot of it probably comes from not taking ourselves too seriously or the material too seriously. So we make shows about really big ideas, but we need
to didactic.
You have to take things on with a light touch, and we kind of operate with the South Park mentality, which is we can get away with making fun of people and kind of making really off kilter remarks. And kind of thing that we do is brought in. It's all about alienation. Make them laugh, and if you make them laugh, then you can say something really horrible.
And entertaining and spats fun. That was the kind of thing that often. But the surprise, of course, it's the difference between a surprise that happens there in the moment and a surprise in the plot or narrative.
Yeah,
we're not so interested in surprises in the plot or in the fictional world of the characters, but
the liveness of what's happening in that moment in the room with the performers and the audience, and then the show, which kind of exists as that third thing.
And to come back to your question, that original question, I think you probably, a lot of that's down to you and whoever else is in the show judging what it feels like, how, in terms of how much you can push something without it becoming too distasteful or too uncomfortable for the audience. I'm always aware of this in anything I write, that I want to unsettle, I don't want to shock or put off, and there's this fine line between those things. I think we're always intent on unsettling, but not ever on.
And there is something, you know,
there's
I think that all performers have a certain quality. You know, you have like your performance quality the same way like people have voice qualities, or like, you know, like you touch something, you touch with a certain way. So each performer has like a fingerprint, I guess is a better way. And we were really lucky with Chris, and he has a really lovely, affable quality. And I think that even though I'm much drier than him, like, you know how to warm an audience to you. And so much of that is about, you know, at the beginning, being on stage and smiling and telling people that you like their scarves, you know, like it, that first section in the very beginning is super important, because if the audience like me from the very start, if they think that I'm sweet, if they think Chris is funny, if they think that we're a nice pair, it doesn't matter what we say, because they already like us. And we do kind of play into the skills of me as a performer, and then the people who we work with. We make shows based on the personalities of the people in the room. So if Tim is filtered through us as well, like, you know.
It's a show that really mixes, I guess, personal politics, kind of the big stuff, the macro stuff. How did you navigate that? I mean, was that quite
without a map? It was as much of anything a case of just, we knew the kind of two ends of the spectrum we were really interested in, and we just wanted to nail ourselves to those and say this is what we want to talk about, and we made the show from that point, and it ended up. I think we were so intent on keeping the two sides there, because we knew that if it was just about the big stuff, like Jess was saying earlier, it becomes didactic, it becomes boring, annoying for an audience, and really alienating. And then we knew also that we were fed up of going to the theatre and seeing plays about people and their mates and whether they should go out with someone or not, and boring little personal stuff that...
So you felt you really wanted to relate the little stuff that people want to talk
about? I think that we're always interested in that. You know, you make a show that's a seemingly small story about big issues. And I think it's hard, from my experiences as a theatre goer, it's hard to, beyond it being didactic, it's hard to relate, you know, to things that are so large. If they don't have a personal element that I could say, I understand that. Not only do I understand that, I can slot myself in. Like, there's enough room for me to put myself into that. So if something's too personal, a wall goes up. You know, and that's kind of the other end of that spectrum. So I think It's about pulling those personal things out two or three or four steps and bringing those big issues in two or three or four steps and actually having them meet in the middle, which leaves enough room on either side for an audience member and the audience whole to kind of see themselves in and come to their own conclusions about and feel something.
But I think another thing we did was not be ashamed to be quite general about, you know, like to simplify things and show it's about making sense of the world, and the simplification of that is that we're all individuals trying to work out how we fit into a community, whether that's a few people or our country or the world or anything in between.
Which is why you go back in history a little bit. Your span is quite...
Well, I suppose that's a sort of attempt to speak about how we're bombarded with stories and atrocities and things that you can't possibly get a handle on.
And how we try and consume them. We try and consume them the same way we consume products.
Yeah, we're encouraged to. I think, I mean, we bandy that word around loads, consuming and consumer.
Yeah, we say it a lot. That's kind of our.
I think there's a lot of stuff inside consuming where we're talking actually also about being passive and how weird it is to just sit eating an ice cream or drinking a beer or whatever you're doing in front of your laptop or in the pub with your mates with music playing, having a nice time, and watching images of a massive flood in Pakistan or of whatever tragedy that is always guaranteed to be going on and televised and internetized and whatever at any given time.
So is it fair to say you're associating empathy and happiness with excess in a lot of different ways throughout the show?
I think that we're... I think in the association we're saying that with all of the excess, actually it's very difficult to empathize and to be really happy because you're unable to empathize with everything that's going on, from the people who are next to you to the people who you're watching on the telly at the pub, you know, drowning in a flood. And you're trying, and because there's so much coming at you all the time and you're told that you need to feel about all of these different things, it's impossible. We don't have enough, you know, a whole community can empathize with lots, with big things. But I think as individuals, it's very hard, and we do live in quite an individualistic society.
We do, and I think what maybe the point we're making is that in failing to empathize, we kind of try and sympathize. And there's a difference between the two, which I've struggled until really recently to articulate. In fact, maybe I still can't, but... It's about a useful kind of connection with things, I suppose. That comes back to the idea of consuming events, is that to me and you, I think, what the show's saying is that consuming events, doing things passively, is not useful.
And there's two other things that I think are quite striking about the show. The first one is distance, which kind of relates a lot to what you were saying. You talk a lot about historical distance and geographical distance and personal distance, and I was wondering whether that was something quite... deliberate for you guys when making the show, or whether it's kind of an offshoot of all these discussions about how we feel about this.
I think that a lot of the historical distance specifically comes from a conversation which is, who's to say that experience needs to be so the other side of that argument that we're saying, like, we all sit and we consume and we consume and we consume. Who's to say that understanding something and appreciating something and having real functional thoughts about something and that being an experience needs to happen with you live at an event? If we talk about those big things that have happened over the course of the 20th century, which we do, although it comes off against a conversation about things that actually you could have seen in day to day, the fact of the matter is all of the things that I list, which is the span of the 20th century, I have seen all of those things, every single one of them. I've seen them in books, I've seen video footage, I've read about them. So even though my experience was it was an experience, whereas Chris's list, which is about these little day-to-day things, most of them are fictional, you know, in that distance and that sense of, like, truth and not truth.
Well, yeah, the idea that seeing something or the fact that distance is shrunk in terms of what we can see and know doesn't mean that we understand it. So the difference between seeing and understanding, I suppose, and comprehending. And then also, I suppose, distance was one of the first things we were dealing with before the show even started being made. I got really interested finding out that you were in New York for
September 11th,
and then thinking about me being in London for the bombings that were here, and talking about how we were disconnected from those experiences, really.
You know, so who says that place is what kind of is that?
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly felt the same removal. September 11th for me became just one more event that I watched on the TV.
Mm. We were quite puzzled by those two experiences of ours when we started talking about it, and I think we're still puzzled about all of it. Like, this is, I think, a really lovely thing it's all unresolved, and that thing about friction in between all the elements of the show, and that's a kind of embodiment of the fact that we've never known quite what to make of it, that there isn't an easy answer to any of these questions, and we don't want audiences to go away feeling like, oh, we've got the answer, and therefore we can just forget about it.
No, we certainly try. I think one of the things that we try and do always is make shows that ask the audience to look at themselves and look at the world around them and how they fit into that and the people around them, and say, you know, ask questions that will hopefully say, how can we make this better for ourselves and for the people who are around us? I think that's why we're so interested in theatre. That's why we both make theatre. That's why we make performance. It's rare that you get a group of people in a room together with something happening live in front of them where everybody is experiencing an event, and you can't consume theatre.
It doesn't fall into those set the rules of consuming that seem to dominate so many other parts of the world these days. That's our take on it anyway.
And would you say failure is an important thing about your work?
Yeah,
definitely. Failure and not having the solution, and it's in a way, it's a dramatization of our experiences making shows. Yeah. I suppose
we like shows that are set up to fail.
Yeah,
like
fail spectacularly and entertainingly and dramatically.
Yeah. I mean, we like shows where people are stuck. Like, I like being, you know, like as a performer, like I like being stuck. I think it's where there are such strong rules. We put such strong rules on it that even if we wanted to break the rules, we couldn't. Like, we fail miserably to kind of exist outside of the rules that we make. Beautifully, we feel beautifully. It's beautiful. It's amazing the way.
Well, I suppose you mean it's sad and it's moot, and there's the fine line between failing in such a way that is so moving that people cry and then they feel better and they don't have to question it, and failing in a way that makes people go away and spend days one way or another thinking about the show and thinking, that why does that still bother me? Why am I still thinking about that? The best thing for us is that second one, days of nagging at you when you see the show. Why am I not quite? Why can't I just put that to bed and forget about it? But everything we do does tend to try and be and hopefully succeed in being moving and sad and touching.
Everyone likes a bit of that. We don't set out to make shows that are sad and moving and touching. I think
we're just suckers for a bit.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about relatable experiences. People understand where we're coming from, and understand the fact that. And hopefully appreciate the fact that we don't have any more answers. All we're doing is posing the questions.
Thanks very much to both of you. Your show starts on the 5th?
The 5th through the 24th.
Of March, yeah.
7:30 p.m. Come see us. Make us happy.
Great, thanks very much, guys.